News World this afternoon, I'm Debbie Parker. Reports say the White House has rejected a request by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to meet with President Obama this month. According to an Israeli official, Netanyahu's aides had asked for a meeting. The White House said the president's schedule will not permit it. Netanyahu, who met with the president on all of his U.S. trips since 2009, has been pushing him to adopt a tougher line against Iran. Memorial services in New York, Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and Washington, D.C. today to mark the 11th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attack. Still no agreement in the Chicago teacher strike. Teachers are expected back on the picket line tomorrow. At issue, job security and evaluations. Teachers say they're anxious to go back.
We do want what's best for our kids. We do want them safe. We do want to return to work.
About 40,000 students, 400,000 rather, have been affected. President Obama's approval rating has passed a milestone. According to a CNN poll, the president's approval rate is now at 51%. That's compared to a disapproval rate of 61% at this time last year. For updates on these and other stories, log on to AURN.com. This is News World This Afternoon, a product of American Urban Radio Networks.
Girl, I know you want to dazzle me with your clean clothes.
That's why you should use new Dazzle Me Cleaner. It's made with real sparkles and shiny stuff that may or may not actually clean, but it sure looks good on the shelf.
I've heard enough.
Diane!
How can I dazzle you?
Don't even start. There is nothing real about sparkles. You want a real clean?
Yes, I do.
You know Pine Sol. It's got everything you need and nothing you don't.
Girl knows what she's talking about.
That's cleaning with the power of Pine Sol, baby.
Yes, it is.
Remain seated while we're on the taxiway. We'll be at the gate in 2 months.
Minutes?
Months.
You wouldn't put up with this. So why put up with fall fashions you have to wait 2 months to afford? At Kohl's, you don't have to wait till the end of the season to get the best of the season. Save on what's new now, so this fall you can afford to look great when you're actually supposed to.
Come to Kohl's 50th anniversary sale starting Wednesday to save on all the newest styles. Plus, everyone gets $10 Kohl's cash for every 50 spent. No limits. Kohl's. Expect great things.
Recent political conventions have played a major role in the momentum of the Democratic and Republican presidential campaigns. White House correspondent April Ryan has the numbers.
The numbers are in after the Democratic National Convention and Republican National Convention bumps, according to Gallup polling. Mitt Romney received a one-point bump in the polls after the RNC in Tampa, Florida. And according to Gallup, President Obama received a three-point bump. President Obama's approval rating, according to Gallup, now stands at an even 50 percentage points. A senior White House staffer says they are not taking anything for granted and operating as if they're in a 10-point deficit behind Mitt Romney. Gallup polling says Mitt Romney has 44%, giving President Obama a 6-point lead. Since President Obama is leading by a few more points, Democrats are hoping enthusiasm at the Democratic National Convention will spill over. Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick.
I think there's a lot of enthusiasm, and there ought to be.
April Ryan, SBN News.
After weeks of speculation and hype, Apple is holding an event tomorrow during which it is expected to announce a new smartphone. The email invitation sent contains a shadow in the shape of a 5. That's a nod to the iPhone 5. Quote with Allstate and they'll make a donation to help HBCU students. Visit allstate.com/represent. You're listening to News World This Afternoon.
Sending money to a college student with Western Union feels... Winning $10,000, now that feels... Be automatically entered for a chance to win $10,000 when you send money across town or within the U.S. for as little as $5 from participating agent locations or WesternUnion.com. Western Union, moving money for better.
No purchase necessary. Subject to official rules at WesternUnion.com/scholarsweeps. Excludes transfers to inmate commissary accounts. Void where prohibited. Sweepstakes ends 10-7-2012.
Get in the zone!
Make sure your car's battery can beat the heat this summer. Stop by AutoZone, your battery headquarters. And not just for car batteries. AutoZone has batteries for your RV, boat, motorcycle, and lawnmower. Plus, if you have an old battery lying around, bring it in for recycling and get a $5 merchandise card. See store for restrictions and details. Keep everything going strong this summer. Visit AutoZone today, your battery headquarters. Parts are just part of what we do.
Get in the zone.
AutoZone.
Americans are pausing to mark the anniversary of the September 11 terror attacks, but this year's ceremonies are more low-key than the last 10. Family members bowed their heads in silence at 8:46 this morning, the moment the first hijacked jetliner crashed into the North Tower, and for the first time, no elected officials. For SBN, I'm Debbie Parker.
¶¶
back with you, ladies and gentlemen, here on Conversation Central. It is now 6 minutes after the hour, 5 o'clock. Hopefully, if you're getting off work, you will find yourself facing some pleasant traffic conditions. We'll be checking up with traffic in just about another 15 minutes. You're listening to WURD AM 900. How in the world are you doing? I hope you had yourself a pleasant day and that a good night awaits you. But until that time, until you lay your head down for some rest, we're going to regale you in pleasant conversation, we hope, right here on your favorite conversation station, WURD AM 900. We're going to get right back to our discussion about Muslim-American relationships and where we've come from since 9/11, where we need to go. And I have to tell you that this has been a real pleasant gumbo here as we have talked to two representatives from the organization Council for American Islamic Relations, the group called CARE. The civil rights attorney in the person of Amara Chaudhry, who is with us today, and also in the studio is their director for outreach and communications, Ms. Rugiyata Kante. And I am getting better at pronouncing these names, and I am becoming very, very proud of myself. Ladies, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And we want to get directly to our phone calls now and allow some of our listeners to ask some questions and to offer some comments. Let's start with Wayne in Germantown. Wayne, thank you for your patience, and we welcome you to the conversation with our guests.
Thank you, and I'd like to extend a greeting to each of the young ladies. Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
And Nick, I'm very pessimistic about the prospects for growth in positive relations. Mm-hmm. I have a family member, my youngest brother has converted from Christianity to Islam mm-hmm. years ago, and all of his children who are young adults have grown up as Muslims in America. And I have a profound interest in the subject because I don't see any attempt on the part of the average flag-waving, God-fearing American to try to understand. I remember after the Oklahoma City bombing, within a few minutes, there was this hysteria that swept the country that Muslims had blown up the federal building.
I remember that.
And I don't think that there has been neither an apology for being wrong nor any attempt to grow in awareness in any respect regarding domestic and foreign relations when the term Islam comes up.
Thinking back to the 1970s, what was it, 1972, Wayne, when the Olympics, you had the situation there where there was a terrorist attack at the Olympics. And from that time on, I believe that America associated Islam and terrorism to the point where they could not separate the two. Is that possibly?
Well, I think it preceded that even. It preceded that. It preceded the Oklahoma City bombing. I think that in America, and based on being an African-American, there has never been any meaningful effort. There have always been some progressive, intelligent, rational human beings in this insane society. But I think counterbalancing that, there are people who don't want to know. And even when presented with honest efforts to reconcile differences, they don't want reconciliation. They're comfortable and they're, in fact, they're motivated more by hostility, by suspicion, by stereotyping. And I'm 80 years old, and I've lived through...
Are you really, Wayne?
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I put my age up.
I had no idea. Look, I really didn't know that you were... Look, I'm going to bring you over some stewed prunes and applesauce later. I didn't realize that you were 80.
Yeah.
Congratulations, man. You really, you've been using that oil of delay. You look very young.
Thank you. Yeah. And I grew up in the 1930s and 40s in America, and I haven't seen any progress in terms of... meaningful relationships. We still live, and I say we, I mean African Americans, still live in what I call Bantustans here in America. And even though there are some people individually who have broken out, they haven't broken out and gained any more equilibrium in terms of balancing within this society.
Let's get a response. I mean, these two young ladies are younger than both of us. And
yes.
course, I am now knowing that I am much younger than you. but these two ladies are younger than us. From your perspective, having watched the span of time that is a part of your generation, have you noticed change in this country, Rugiatu?
I think that there are some people who, you know, after 9/11 or after they realized the discrimination that Muslims were facing, that they tried to learn more about Islam. I don't think it's the majority of people, but I think that there are people out there that have done that. Not only that, you have a lot of interfaith groups that sprung up mm-hmm. after 9/11, a lot of people realizing that there should be, it was an opportunity to come together as Americans. So I think people are becoming more aware. But I think what's interesting is that a lot of people before 9/11, they didn't really know what Islam was. They didn't know what Muslims are. They didn't even know the term. The term Right. probably didn't even register in their mind. But now you find, although we're having negative media kind of press about Muslims or Islam, but a lot of people are talking about Muslims now, and a lot of people are inquiring about the religion of Islam, even though it came out of, let's just say, propaganda. But you do find people who are reaching out to Muslims and Muslim organizations.
So let me just say that I share Wayne's pessimism about the future. At least I think it's going to be a long, hard road ahead of us. But when you ask the question about over the span of our lives, what have we noticed? Well, particularly as it relates to the Muslim issue, I have not seen improvements.
Mm.
And
really?
I also believe that, you know, truth be told, and you mentioned the Munich Games, the Munich Olympics, and I agree with Wayne that I think that anti-Muslim sentiment was probably already percolating in the United States. Brother Malcolm said some very interesting things prior to that time that colored right. American perception of Islam, at least of the nation. But so that I haven't seen it getting better, and I don't know when it will. But what has changed over the last few decades is the fact that America's attitudes towards race generally have changed. And so if I am right, if American Muslim identity has been racialized, if we can, one, if I am right, and if I can convince the majority of Americans that I'm right, it will change the way Americans perceive American Muslim identity. And I'll give you an example of that. So my dad immigrated to Virginia in 1969, which, as we all know, sounds like it should have been at the end of the Civil Rights Movement. We also know that as recently as 1971, federal courts in Virginia issued the last federal court ruling desegregating Virginia schools, because of course we have massive resistance in Virginia.
Right.
So if you think about that, then a man with dark skin came to Appalachian Virginia 2 years before Virginia schools were desegregated. Well, that's not where Virginia is now on the race issue.
You know, it's
and
it's,
so yeah.
Well, Wayne, I appreciate that call. So you have one person who says things have changed, and another one shares your.
Well, I said that there has been. I mean, I don't think that it's been all bad. I would say that the good thing is that people are having this conversation about Muslims and Islam in America. And I feel like I have seen some positive discussion on that.
Okay. I will say that actually, I want to take it to the next level. What will it take for the perception of American Muslims to change? Because, you know, I talked about how America's attitudes towards minority groups has generally changed, but that took a very long time to change, we know. And also something very dramatic had to happen during the Civil Rights Movement. And I'm not just talking about the Brown v. Board decision, although I tend to think that the law cures all. We all know that that took place within a context where increasingly the media was showing America who the American South was.
Okay.
You know, and Americans were seeing police putting fire hoses and police dogs on people sitting at a lunch counter. They saw coverage of George Wallace
standing
in the
doorway of the University
they
of
saw
Alabama.
Pictures of adults throwing rocks at school children trying to desegregate schools. And when we saw all those images, now hate looked bad.
Right.
American Muslims have not been subjected to the same level of evil, and I wonder if that's what it takes to change America.
Thanks for that call, Wayne. We've got to get ready to move on, but I thank you for getting us started.
Thank you, Nick.
It's a privilege, man, always. All of our lines are lit here, so we want to get to our... Can I press you ladies to stay a little bit beyond the time that we had spoken of?
Yes. Sure.
Okay, and that way we want to make sure that all of our callers can have their say. Jacob, you've been on a cell phone. We want to get right to you. Thank you for your call, and welcome to the program.
Nick, I always say peace be unto you, but it's still assalamu alaikum to everybody there.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Well, first of all, I was glad to hear one of the sisters say that, you know, there was Africans that were enslaved in this country that were brought over that were already Muslim, like in roots. I'm surprised to know that a lot of people didn't know that Conte Kinte, even in the roots, was Muslim, you know.
Right, right.
And when I go back and tell them to watch it, they said they missed that the first time. But, yeah, you know, they did. They weren't paying attention. But, you know, my sisters, I've been a convert to Islam for almost, close to 40 years. And this day, 9/11, is a special day to me because in 1974, this is the day I lost my father. And to me, it was the day I became a man because I didn't, you know, I didn't have that father figure anymore. So in my own self, I knew I had to stand up and do something and be a man because, you know, the man that I had, you know, had as a father, was Allah took him from me. But it's so many Muslims that have to be educated about what Islam is. Not only Americans that's non-Muslim, because like the sister was speaking on her dress. Okay, Islam teaches about the dress, modesty, whatever, but Allah says in the Quran that the best dress for the Muslim is taqwa, right? God consciousness. And which one of us could see how conscious people are, but we do that. We'll look at somebody, and just because we see something that we don't understand, we might call somebody a non-Muslim. And the person might have been in Islam, born in Islam, you know, might be Hafiz of Quran. We don't know, but we'll make that ignorant statement. And I'm just going to leave with this one, Nick. It's a bad stereotype. You mean to tell me that you can be a Muslim woman, educated and intelligent, like you sisters are, and still be Muslim?
So you're saying that there are some people who feel that an educated woman is sort of oxymoronic when it comes to being a Muslim, that a Muslim woman is supposed to be somewhat, for want of a better term, primitive?
Yeah, this is the stereotype that I hear a lot of times, that, oh, all Muslim women are backwards and they're not really educated and stuff like that. There's a crazy stereotype that people have. But every time I see or hear an intelligent Muslim sister, I always, you know, joke with that, you know, that you can't be Muslim, right?
I got you.
All right, but thank you, Nick. I'm listening. Excellent program.
Thank you, Jacob. I appreciate you calling in. We got a minute before we check in with traffic, ladies, but do you encounter that as being Muslim, people expect you to not be educated or to not be professional? Is that something that either of you encounter or both of you encounter?
Yeah, I mean, I think I definitely encountered that. Just being in a field that's, so my background is in television film production. So, I mean, you see it's predominantly of the Caucasian race. You rarely see, or not really, but you see, you don't see a lot of people looking like you,
right.
A lot of people of color. So, I mean, when you come in the mix, people do have certain, you know, myths and misconceptions about you because they haven't interacted with Muslims or, you know, they have their own personal bias.
I got 30 seconds before we check in with traffic, Amara. You're an attorney, and, I mean, look, that's... The Philadelphia attorney is known to be at the pinnacle of professionalism, but do you find that people saying, wait a minute, you can't be an attorney and a Muslim woman?
Well, it depends on who you mean by people. So
you know, the people.
Yeah, they.
Them.
But I'll tell you, I'm going to respond because you have to distinguish between what Muslims think and what non-Muslims think.
Hold that thought for just a moment, and then we'll take traffic, then we'll come back. We're in the studio talking with two representatives from the organization CARE in the form of Amara Chaudhry and Rugiatu Kante, and we'll be right back directly after this.
fair amount of volume today. Not a whole lot of additional problems anyway. This traffic report brought to you by Garmin. If you're heading south on the 42 freeway, we're still tied up from 295 in Through Creek Road. I-95 northbound slowing from Vine all the way up to Bridge Street now, and then from Academy and through Woodhaven. Southbound slowing from Ridley on down to 476. Busy on the Vine Expressway. Eastbound solid still from the Schuylkill into Broad Street, again from 8th Street and through the 95 ramp. The westbound side just minor delays heading into the Schuylkill Expressway. And the westbound Schuylkill itself ties up University through Vine, again City Avenue out to Belmont, then Gladwin to Conshohocken. Eastbound traffic slows at Gulf Mills. Again, 476 into Gladwin, and then from Montgomery all the way down to South Street. Southbound Northeast extension of the Pennsylvania Turnpike still slowing at mile marker 24.8. They still have the left lane blocked waiting for some concrete to cure at some earlier emergency construction work. Hate traffic? Don't be a hater. Get a Garmin Nuvi with subscription-free HD digital traffic and avoid it with updates as often as every 30 seconds. Drive with Garmin, the most trusted name in GPS. For more traffic information, go to SigAlert.com. I'm Randy Chepigan with your Philadelphia area traffic.
Philadelphia's business community understands the importance of WURD and the value of our voice in the community, and that's why we're asking them to take a leadership role in the 990 membership drive. This year, we've introduced a new corporate membership level. Your investment supports 900 AM's continued growth and provides access to exceptional benefits, including club member gifts, exclusive 990 members-only events, VIP tickets to Word Speaks programs, a live radio broadcast, and so much more. Become a corporate member of 900 AM and invest in independent media that promotes open and authentic dialogue about the issues that matter most. The annual corporate contribution is $900. For more information about WURD's membership program, visit 900amwurd.com or call 215-425-7875. Checks may be sent to Word Radio, 1341 North Delaware Avenue, Philadelphia, PA 19125.
I needed a bachelor's degree to get promoted. That's why I chose Pierce.
I needed a bachelor's degree to fit into my busy life. That's why I chose Pierce.
I needed a bachelor's degree to prove I could do it. That's why I chose Pierce.
Pierce College really works for working adults with affordable tuition, dedicated advisors, and degrees online or on campus. Work, life, a bachelor's degree? You can do this. Learn how at phillylearners.com. Created by Pierce to help you earn your degree.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. We leave no warrior behind. Wounded Warrior Project is a nonprofit organization created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war. Whether those scars are physical or mental, we're here to make sure that they heal. And whether it's helping those with post-traumatic stress disorder live a normal life again, or giving much-needed support to injured warriors and veterans hospitals, because no one deserves our help more than the men and women who risk their lives to keep us safe. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind. Ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
A little bit of late afternoon rhythm to get you started. For those of you who are percolating away from your office, Nick Taliaferro here with you on your favorite conversation station, WURD AM 900. We're having a great day in conversation in a beautiful sun-spanked afternoon here in the city of Philadelphia. Time and temperature check is being brought to you, of course, by your good friends here at WURD AM 900, where we invite you to become a part of the family, and we want you to know, of course, that membership has its privileges. How about weather in a word? Beautiful out there. How about in two words? Real pretty. For those of you who are trying to get yourself some sleep tonight, it's going to be just an absolutely gorgeous sleeping night under clear under clear skies. It's going to be 55 degrees this evening, currently standing steady at about 73 degrees. Tomorrow you can expect sunny skies, going up to a temperature of about 81, going down tomorrow night to about 58 degrees under clear skies once again. This is WURD. We're on air, online, and always in the community, progressive and proud, AM 900. Let's get back to our conversation. When we broke, Amara, we were asking you the question about whether or not people, and of course we had to clarify who people were because we were talking to a lawyer, but once we clarified who people were, whether they expected a Muslim woman to not be a professional woman or, and you were saying?
So I was saying that amongst the Muslim community, there is no surprise that Muslim women can be educated and professional, because obviously there are a lot of very highly educated professional women, and I believe, I haven't looked at the stats for a while, but actually in the Muslim community, there's a higher proportion of educated women than in the non-Muslim
community. In the Muslim community in America or the Muslim community, period?
In America.
So. In America.
So,
okay.
So there's that. The reaction I do get within the Muslim community is law. Like, that seems weird. I think it's changing, but certainly when I entered the legal profession, that seemed weird. And then a few years later, when people were like, oh, okay, that I guess members of our community are in the legal field, so what do you do? Do you do patent? Do you do corporate? And at that time, I was still a public defender. So indigent criminal defense was not just weird. Remember that if you go outside of Philadelphia, criminal justice, that field is still the field dominated by giant white guys with crew cuts on one side and giant white guys with long hair on the other, on the defense side.
On the defense, okay.
You know, prosecution versus defense. But that is...
No stereotyping.
Yeah, but it is a male-dominated career.
And, well, what drew you there? I mean, beside the fact that a slight level of controversy and the kicking over of stereotypes seems to be an enjoyable pastime.
I believe that the criminal justice system is the place where America litigates our moral values.
Okay.
And I also believe very strongly that America criminalizes, or I shouldn't say that, that the criminal justice system disproportionately affects marginalized populations. I believe that I identify with being a marginalized population, obviously a person of color, all those kinds of issues. But anyway, so there's some question about that, or how can you defend someone when you know they're guilty, kind of thing. Like, I don't know that they were guilty. I wasn't there. Were you there? There were two people there. One of them's dead. You know, but, and I don't say that lightly, but, you know, there's those kinds of issues. Outside the Muslim community, I get the reaction. I don't think people say, well, what are you doing, you know, being educated or whatever, but there are stereotypes. Like, people assume you have to be marriage obsessed or you're not taking your job seriously. I actually had a woman once say to me that, well, you know, like, I hit a glass ceiling at a point in my career, my public defense career, where many female supervisors assumed I wasn't really taking the job seriously because my real goal
was to get married.
Was to get married someplace. And there was nothing that I could do to change that. I couldn't show up early, leave late, volunteer for cases. So I think it's like all forms of prejudice in America. It's getting harder to see. It's less overt, more covert. It's more subtle. It's more implicit or even unconscious than it is explicit.
And you kind of see that, and I'm glad that you touched on that, where you had Muslims who were actually applying for jobs and their name is Muhammad or Fatima or some name that is, I guess, quote unquote Muslim or looks Muslim.
Right.
And then they don't get a job. But as soon as they change their name, the next day they get their job. So it's the same, like you said, it's the same old
prejudice. That happens. I mean, that happens typically enough for it to be commonplace.
I would say so, yes.
And I think that, you know, if you asked the people, they would not remember that.
Right.
Okay. People aren't conscious of this kind of thing. But I also want to talk about, and Nick, I don't remember if you said this on air or during another time, but you were surprised when you called Karen, you got two females.
Very much so. Yes. I expected two men to be,
you know,
my
and
guests.
This is very interesting because I remember, I guess it was a few months ago, and I was speaking to a colleague of mine who coincidentally happens to be an American of Pakistani Muslim ancestry, and he said something about a gentleman very close to Ruki my heart, who is our former executive director, Moeen Khawaja, and he said, you know, what's great about this gentleman is that he looks like the walking stereotype of what a Muslim civil rights leader should look like. Like, he had the shaved head and the glasses and the beard, and you know, it's interesting that in our community, we still believe that you have to, it's good to look like the stereotype, because it's furthering an image. Now,
do Muslims think that?
You know, I don't know. I think so. I think so. I mean,
they're more inclined toward.
I think it's a very, even an unconscious bias. Right. I don't think Muslims are walking around going, hey, I want a bald guy in a suit and tie.
Right.
But somehow, I mean, turn on any TV and see who's speaking for the Muslim community. We do have a couple of sisters in our organization who do speak for our community. And once again, you know, I can never be, I could shave my head, but I can never be a guy with a beard on TV unless I take some drastic medical steps. And at the same time, that female stereotype is very different as well, because I don't think I've ever seen, you see very few sisters representing the Muslim community who do not, and I'm doing air quotes, you know, look Muslim. They don't have the hijab, they don't, you know, things like that. So I think that,
No, and anybody walking by the studio, and Talibah, we're coming right to you, but if they walk by the studio, they'd look in and they immediately see Rugiyatu, and they're saying, oh, she's Muslim,
mm-hmm.
because she has on the hijab. And they would look at you and they would say, she's there.
She's something foreign.
Yeah. She's somebody.
Exotic.
Yeah, she's exotic. Yeah, you know. Let's go to Talibah and Alni and continue our conversation. Thank you for your call, Talibah. You're with our guest in the studio from CARE. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
And good afternoon. While I was listening, I wrote down a number of points. The first one is regarding Muslim women in education. It came up during a report that I did last year. And in this country, Muslim women have the highest level of education of women of any religious group except for Jewish women.
Amen, sister.
And
thank you for telling us that.
Oh. And I know among people I associate with, I feel like really, I don't know, I feel self-conscious because I only have a bachelor's degree.
You only have a bachelor's degree.
Yeah, and, you know, some of my sisters are doctor this and doctor that, or they at least have a master's degree or two. So, you know.
Well, is it, and I'm talking now to three Muslim women, but is it assumed that somehow or another devoutness and being observant of one's religion for a woman in Islam, that it is counterintuitive to being educated? And
well, let me put it this way. When I was in class at Drexel, I wasn't the only sister in a face veil. If you ever saw me, I'm in a full face veil, ice cream, gloves. You know, like we would make our prayers during our breaks. You know, we observed Ramadan. We did everything that we were, you know.
Were you all American born, or were some of you from other countries, or?
I would say among the people who were in my class, yes. But I find
I asked two questions there. Were you all American born, or were some of you from other countries? So.
Well, with the people in my program, the people were, but then you have to consider other programs like engineering.
I'm sorry, they were American born?
Is that what you're saying?
Okay.
But when you look at other programs like engineering students, mm-hmm. at Drexel, there are so many Muslims, you know, because it seems that most engineers are Muslim. So you have, you know, all these engineers.
I'm getting very hearty agreement in the studio. I mean, both Rugiyatu and Amara are agreeing with you. Is that true?
Why
is that?
I think that, like, just generally speaking, within the Muslim community, the types of professions that people like to go into is engineering or medicine.
Well, I agree with Rugi, but I can only speak with respect to the immigrant Muslims because many people, you know, at the time they immigrated, it was very difficult to enter the United States from, say, an Asian country.
Well,
however, if you were a highly desirable person,
got you.
And then so there were the professions. Where was America not finding that we could fill enough slots in?
Engineering, technical fields.
Medicine, nuclear science. So you get that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, even within the West African community, like, people want you to be a doctor. Like, I mean, that's the desired
but
field.
But that's a cultural something.
Right.
Talibah, what was your major there?
Excuse me?
What was your major, Talibah?
Behavioral health counseling. But my son is an engineer. My father was an engineer. I have a nephew who's an engineer. They were all born in this country.
Are they all Muslim?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, you can't, you know, that may have once been true, but, you know, I don't know about now.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to say, too, like, regarding 9/11,
mm-hmm.
I think 9/11 was kind of like an excuse, because I've been around long enough to know that this bigotry and hatred toward Muslims, it didn't appear after 9/11, which is like people had an excuse to come out of the closet. It's like I would liken it, let's say, to African Americans, our experience, and that the people who hated Muslims, they could like put on their sheets now.
Okay.
So like now it's okay to hate them. But I also remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, when you had the whole situation over there with Iran, mm-hmm. how then you could walk down the street as a Muslim woman, and like we were advised not to walk alone because we were being physically attacked right here in Philadelphia. Sisters were being beaten. They were having their veils snatched off. I had people cursing at me. Can you imagine? I'm walking down the street with an infant, and people are howling obscenities at me and say, go back home. And I've only been out of this country once in my life. So, you know.
And they're telling you to go back home.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, howling obscenities at a 5-foot woman with an infant. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, come on. You know, but.
It is embarrassing and it is shameful.
It's interesting she brings that up, and I kind of go back to President Obama in the election, just because I know that personally, just watching people saying, oh, is he a Muslim or he's not a Muslim, that really had an effect on my life, where people would say, okay, we think he's a secret Muslim, and
yeah.
therefore, you know, he shouldn't be president. Even though I feel like people, it was accepted to say that too. And I felt like that was, people really wanted to call him another name, but they know that they couldn't. But they called him a Muslim.
I got you. Mm-hmm. A name that began with an N.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. If I could.
Thank you, Talibah. I appreciate that call.
Oh, okay. But if I could just say one more thing quickly.
Okay.
I would say when people, you know, they like to talk about so-called Islamic terrorism, which there's no such thing, you know, as Islamic terrorism. You might have Muslims who might commit terrorist acts. But again, according to statistics I read, 2/3 of the terroristic acts in this country are committed by Christians. They're usually by, you know, like the people who are the mm-hmm. far right wing, you know.
Far right wing and some of the
they're the ones,
some of the racial identity folks,
right,
in the Northwest. Yeah.
Yeah, but also too, when you had like the situation in Northern Ireland, people weren't talking about Catholic terrorists.
You make a good point, Talibah. You make a good point. It is the demonizing of a group for the convenient sake of being able to demonstrate hatred and be justified by doing so.
Exactly.
Well put, ma'am.
Can I actually address a couple of points that Talibah mentioned? By the way, you have a beautiful name, but you know, one of them, she was talking about how 9/11 was somewhat of an excuse because mm-hmm. anti-Muslim bigotry pre-existed that, and you know, it's very shameful. What happened to this young woman, you know, in the 70s. But remember, you know, I talked about Brother Malcolm, then you had the Iran hostage crisis, you had Beirut. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as though all of a sudden, 9/11, a lot of people, especially Muslim activists, feel like we need to speak. And the line you always hear was, on 9/11, I felt as though my country was attacked and my religion was hijacked. And it's like, you know, I did not react to it as either an American or a Muslim. Mm-hmm. I reacted to it as a human. Human lives have been lost. We should be sad. We should figure out what's happening. But also, I think that many of the Muslim advocacy groups who are speaking on behalf of our community now do not have the history of American Muslim experience or the civil rights experience in this country. So 9/11 is the first thing they remember because they had only been in the country for a few years.
Right,
but,
right,
you know, if
right.
you have been around the 60s, the 70s, the Reagan era for any kind of minority group was an interesting one. But I wanted to touch on a couple of things where she said, you know, she's never been outside this country, but people were shouting, go home. And I briefly touched on the fact that even African Americans, when they convert to Islam, it affects the way that Americans perceive their Americanness.
That's true. Because that's very true.
You know, and it's interesting because you're saying that's very true, and yet when we go outside the African American community, people won't admit to it. But it's very true that when you become Muslim, even if you keep your legal name, there's nothing outwardly Muslim about you. Once people find out, somehow you're less American.
Well, the classic case of that is Muhammad Ali.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, that's...
There are people who maintain his name is Cassius Clay.
Right.
It's very interesting. And then the final thing is when she spoke about terrorist acts committed by Christians in the United States. And Ruki touched me here in the studio when she was talking about the Klan, because I like to talk about how violence being committed in the name of religion is nothing new.
Right.
You know, the Klan had very fiery speeches that suggested that Christianity demanded racial injustice.
Right. True.
And I grew up in an environment where I heard this rhetoric as recently as the 1980s. So I would have to say if I grew up white in that environment, it was so convincing I probably would have bought in. I mean, they have a very convincing rhetoric. So we can't really, we have to understand when people are, when people, especially people who do not have economic options for them or abilities to move up in society, why they can be attracted to anyone who says commit violent acts in the name of religion. We in this country, in the United States of America, have seen that happen.
Mm-hmm. Fatima, we'll be coming to you in just a moment, but I wanted to ask you two ladies a question. Is there something... is there something innately opposed to being American or American culture that is a part of the Islamic faith from your perspective? Is there something within Islam that says, you know, if you're a good Muslim, then you can't really be a good American? Because some people believe that.
No, I mean, that's a total myth in it of itself. Like other religions, you have Muslims. Like Muslim is a religion. Like you said, people see it as an identity, but there's nothing within the religion that says that you can't hold on to your ethnic identity or country of origin.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We're going to be coming right back, take our call from Fatima in just a second, but we're a little bit late in checking on traffic, and for those who are trying to get home from work, there's real important news for you. Traffic is brought to you, of course, by automobiles. Automobiles, they stay on the highway. We'll be right back after this.
Fairly heavy traffic this afternoon. Got a little heavier again on the southbound lanes of 295 in South Jersey. This traffic report brought to you by Garmin. It's crawling southbound now from Route 73 down to the Black Horse Pike. An accident off in the shoulder attracting a bit of attention. And likewise on southbound 73 itself, not only the usual traffic light delays, but a little extra tie-up from Kings Highway down to Route 38. Again, an accident off on the shoulder there. Northbound lanes of 95 still tying up from 452 into the Commodore Barry Bridge. And again from Vine all the way up to Bridge Street. The southbound side backs up from Woodhaven down to Academy, again Allegheny down through Girard, and then from Broad Street to Island Avenue through the construction, then from Ridley on down to 476. Still tied up on the eastbound lanes of the Vine Expressway from the Schuylkill into Broad Street, and again slow at the 95 ramp. Fairly typical delays both ways on the Schuylkill Expressway itself. Hate traffic? Don't be a hater. Get a Garmin Nuvi with subscription-free HD digital traffic and avoid it with updates as often as every 30 seconds. Drive with Garmin, the most trusted name in GPS. For more traffic information, go to SigAlert.com. I'm Randy Chepigan with your Philadelphia area traffic.
If that doesn't make your blood flow, folks, you just ain't got none. 60 minutes away from the hour of 6 o'clock here on your favorite conversation station, WURD AM 900 is where your dial is set. I'm Nick Taliaferro, and in the studio with me today is Rugiatu Kante and Amara Chaudhry, who are both here representing the organization, the Council for American Islamic Relations, better known as CARE, and we're talking about the progress that's been made, or the lack of progress that may have been made or hasn't been made since 9/11, and what we are doing now to either extend the a healthy level of relationship in this country and trying to understand one another in a country where we say we believe in pluralism, but particularly when we find discrimination that seems to be at times tolerated and even endorsed by individuals who are in leadership. We were talking about it, Rugiata, you had made mention of the fact that they tried to demonize the president by calling him Muslim when in reality they really wanted to call him something else. But there was something else you said you wanted to say.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to really, really, really talk about how diverse Muslims are around the world, and even American Muslims. I mean, like you said, you have African American Muslims, you have Muslims of South Asian origin, you have Muslims or immigrants of Southeast Asian origin. And what is very interesting to me is that there's a growing rate of Latino Muslims, and there's been a lot of media coverage on that. I don't know if you've...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a growing rate of Latino Muslims. And I was even watching something, a program that talked about Native American Muslims. So, I mean, really, it's being a Muslim, I think it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people just put Muslims in this just one group. And we're very diverse. We have different... There's different ethnic origins of Muslims. There's different... sort of the way people practice Islam. I mean, and there's different views.
Now, the two of you ladies are from different parts of the world completely. The one thing that you have in common is that you're both Muslim. Mm. But I know I'm a Christian from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and the way I practice Christianity is completely different
right.
from the way somebody in Mexico might practice it. Is there a difference between the Islam that you knew growing up as a Pakistani American and as an American with Liberian roots and ancestry? I have to make sure I get that straight.
Well, I mean, I think people see it's, I think that religion all in different religions is a journey. So the way that you started practicing your religion early in life, it might not be the same as you're practicing now, as with all religions.
Oh yeah, it really was different when I was younger, because I didn't practice much at all.
So it kind of goes to the idea that people just think that Muslims are just one group and they practice the same way. And I think that goes into the point where a lot of people talking about 9/11 believe that all Muslims are to be blamed for the criminal activity of any other Muslim or any other criminal that happens to be a Muslim. And this is, I mean, you see that now where we have to come on the air, we have to denounce, obviously we didn't denounce terrorism, but people are just like, oh, you know, Muslims did this
well,
act.
Well, we're a front. That's
right, yeah. Right.
So but if you notice, I didn't ask you to denounce.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, how do you feel about terrorism?
Right. You know, it's like one Muslim commits a criminal activity and it has something to do with me because I don't know, because I'm Muslim. So a lot of people like to associate you know, Muslims together in that way. And that actually happened to me during last month, during Ramadan, the holy month of fasting. I was on SEPTA, I was riding the train home, and there was a guy, you know, that just came and started yelling at me, and there was another...
Started yelling at you?
Yes, another Muslim lady who was in her full garb. Basically, all you could see is her eyes. And he just started yelling like, all that stuff that's going on in Nigeria, the conflict, why don't you tell your Muslim brothers and sisters to stop? And I'm sitting down thinking like, okay, like what, I mean, obviously you feel for humanity, but really what does that necessarily have to do with me?
What occasioned his yelling at you?
I have no idea. I think he was probably provoked by the way that we both said the greetings of peace, and maybe because the other Muslim lady was actually dressed in a full garb.
Okay.
So, I mean, just that was just really crazy, and just I mean, because I actually have been in Nigeria before, and they said that there's a religious conflict that's going on, but a lot of issues that happen around the world, a lot of conflicts that are more complex, and people present it in the media as being religious conflicts, whether it's between, you know, Christians or Jews or Christians right. and Muslims, you know, I have to pay a price for it because I'm Muslim. And, you know, so that's really absurd.
So, Nick, I want to address two questions you put up. One, before the break, you were saying, is there anything inherent to Islam that
right, that is
prevents you from being American? I want us to think of it in reverse, because I personally believe that there are things about American culture that rejects any non-Christian or even non-Protestant worldview. Mm-hmm. We have seen a predominant American narrative or just consider as less American, for example, the Jewish community, which there are some people in this country who believe that if you are a Jewish American, you are more loyal to Israel than your own country. Certainly Hindus, Buddhists, there are other things. And not too long ago in America's history, if you were Catholic,
Kennedy almost didn't make it.
Because he was going to follow the Pope rather than his country. So I mean,
and also with Mormonism.
We'll see how it plays out. Because in today's society, people are too polite to say, I don't like Mitt Romney because he's a Mormon. They're just kind of going, I don't know, there's something about him.
Well, he is a little stiff, you have to admit.
But when you were talking about different ways of practicing the faith, you did ask, are there different ways of practicing the faith depending upon geographic context?
Right. Nationality.
It's very important. I am of Pakistani ancestry, and I have visited many times in my life, but I'm not Pakistani. I think that's a very important distinction. But I see two things with that issue. One, I know that there are some mosques which are don't have a large population from the Indian subcontinent who have said they've had a no midriff rule on the observance of religious holidays. And that's because in our community, in the Pakistani Indian community, an Eid gathering is an opportunity to wear our most beautiful saris.
Right.
Now, obviously, that is a lot of skin in a community. Women are covered except for their eyes. So, we do see, and that to an American audience, dress is just so symbolic. Right. People have a lot of perceptions about you and the extent to which you practice your faith based upon how you dress. So I have seen how Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, these populations are perceived differently in America than other cultures. But, for me growing up, I mentioned previously, in Appalachia, so I almost feel like I had my personal Protestant Reformation view of Islam, in that there was this concept of faith alone. So I learned how to perform the ritual prayers in college, I taught myself because I wanted to be able to practice my religion the way.
Were your parents they weren't observant at the time.
And the nearest mosque would have been in Blacksburg, 2 hours away, and it was just a small gathering space.
So you were displaced from Muslim as a religion,
right? And so then, what is your identity? To one extent, we had a self identity that was related to being Pakistani.
Okay,
we did read. We did embrace the pillars and the concept, but Islam has not just five ritualistic prayers during the day, but also the option of making supplication, of speaking to God in your own language at any time, any place. And that was something I did during my day. People actually laugh because I do this in very comical ways, which is very predominant in Southern culture. We complain to God when traffic isn't going in our way, when we hurt ourselves, stub our toe, whatever. Yeah. So
our Jewish friends would call it kvetching,
I mean, it's like, God, really? That truck can't get out of my way?
Yeah, we Christians do that, too.
You think that the God's going to move that truck out of your way, but, he has other things to do. But so that is the way that geographic context influences the way I've seen people practice the faith.
Mm-hmm. I know that we've got a bunch of people who are calling, and so that means that you folks are just being held hostage here until such time as all of the people who obviously want to address you are able to do so. So why don't we, we've got a few moments before we take our break at the top of the hour. We did tell Fatima that we would get to her, and we shall make good on that promise now. Fatima, thank you for your call. Is it Fatima or Fatima? Which one would you prefer?
Fatima is the more appropriate pronunciation, yes.
And so it shall be, Fatima. We thank you for your call and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I just wanted to say kudos to you, Nick, and WURD for this topic today, because the main point that I wanted to make and the reason for my call is the comment somebody had made earlier about this dispelling myths and stereotypes. And I feel like the main way that we can dispel myths and stereotypes about Muslims, and particularly Muslim women, is by education and exposure and experience with Muslims. Because unless you have those things, you can only go by what you see in the media. So if people get more exposure and more education, then their sentiments about Muslims may change.
May I ask a quick question, and I hate to interject here. Are you Muslim? I'm not going to assume it because of your name, but you are. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Born and raised Muslim in Philadelphia, African-American. And I wanted to speak to that as well because the population of Muslims here in Philly, we are in a very unique place because Philadelphia has a high percentage of Muslims in this city, and they come from diverse backgrounds.
Let me, and I want to ask another question, because for a while I had one friend that was born and raised Muslim, and most of the Muslims that I knew were individuals who had been a part of the Nation of Islam, who had become Sunni after there was some considerable evolution within that movement. And so was that the pathway that you took, Fatima?
Oh, that was the pathway that my parents took, because I actually was born into the religion.
You know, I just realized how old I am when you said it that way. I'm just going. When I finish this program, I'm going to find a hole, jump in it, and pull the dirt on me, and then it'll all be over. But okay.
Yes, absolutely. That is the path that quite a few of the people who are my mother and father's age have taken. You know, circa 1960, 1970, as I mentioned before. But there's a whole, I will almost say, movement here in Philadelphia, and a considerable amount of them are youth. And they are educated, as the young ladies talked about earlier. A lot of them have bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, and even are like doctors, nurses, lawyers, and they're from diverse backgrounds. They're not necessarily immigrant. They may be African-American or African or other nationalities as well, or, you know, identify as Muslim.
Well, ladies, When you think of Muslims, and you look at the large African American community of Muslims here in the city of Philadelphia, does it resonate with what you identify with as Islam? It does.
Certainly, obviously.
From Appalachia, it resonates with.
Well, because when we look at so for two reasons. So one is the sort of the enlightened. We look at national statistics. We know that, you know, American pop culture seems to correlate Arab identity and Muslim identity. And right. And the reality is that half of all American Arabs are non-Muslim. Mm-hmm. But the larger, the more interesting thing is when we look at the Muslim population.
Half of American Arabs are not Muslim?
I think that's the stat, right, isn't it? Right. Yeah. Which would make sense.
They have a large Christian Arab population.
I mean, like Lebanese Catholics, right, for
yeah,
example.
Yeah, yeah.
Syrian, Eastern Orthodox Christians, Egyptian Coptics. But the other point
I
was going to...
I didn't know it was half, though. I didn't know it was that.
It's much larger than you would think. And the other number that's important to remember is that when we look at the American Muslim population, one-third is African-American.
Mm-hmm.
One-third is from the Indian subcontinent. And the other third is everybody else. So mm-hmm. Arabs are only part of that everybody else third.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's an important number. And I think I mentioned earlier in this program, even when we're looking at the immigrant communities, Rugi mentioned this, the caller who just called said that some of these immigrant communities are coming from countries that we would consider outside the greater Middle East,
right.
Southeast Asia, Africa, the Balkans, Eastern Europe.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We're right at the top of the hour. Fatima, we want to thank you for your call. We've got to take a quick break, and our guests are being held hostage by your calls, and we shall come back and continue our conversation. You're listening to WRD AM 900 back after this.
Kwanzaa 360 Directory.
Visit the newly remodeled law office of Leon Williams at 327 South 13th Street, or subscribe to my journal. Had an accident lately? That's my specialty. Call 215-732-0180. That's 215-732-0180.
Kwanzaa 360 Directory. Pick up your Kwanzaa 360 merchandise here at the station, 1341 North Delaware Avenue, Suite 300, between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Kwanzaa 360 t-shirts, mugs, and wristbands make the perfect gift for you or someone else. Kwanzaa 360 Directory. Get your business listed in the Kwanzaa 360 Directory. Call 215-425-7875.
There are many debt relief plans and scams out there. So if you find yourself with $10,000 or more in credit card debt, get the facts about legitimate debt relief solutions available to you. Call American Credit Card Solutions for a free informational kit that will tell you about your options in simple, easy-to-understand language. The kit is free, the shipping is free, and the consultation is free. Call now, 800-648-4545. There's no hard sell and no pressure. The free informational kit can be mailed to you today so you can examine all the debt relief options available with no one pressuring you to make a quick decision. Call now for your free debt relief kit. Call 800-648-4545. This is a first-come, first-serve offer and kits are limited. So call right now for your free debt relief informational kit. 800-648-4545. That's 800-648-4545.
On air, online, and in the community, 900 AM WURD, Philadelphia.
An Israeli rejection from President Obama. This is news from the Sheridan Broadcasting Network. I'm Debbie Parker. A request by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to meet